Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
It is Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golick Jr. and Amber Wilson hanging out with us today. And we got some great stuff to get to. We know we've got baseball in full swing right now. June Lee going to stop by, our ESPN writer, does a great job covering baseball. Talk about Steve Cohen, a billionaire owner, turning into a glorified internet commenter as the Mets begin or continue their post-All-Star game slide. We'll also get into plenty more on the world of the fantasy football front, because we got ESPN's Fantasy Marathon going on right now. Again, you can download the app wherever you get your apps. You can also sign up at ESPN.com/FFL. You can sign up, manage your own team anywhere. You get expert analysis right there in the app. Great stuff from Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, Mike Clay, all the voices that you heard earlier today on ESPN Radio. And Amber, you and I both varying degrees of involvement in fantasy over our time here, either at work or for pleasure here. And I don't know what the most frustrating thing is about a fantasy season for most people, but I know for me, and we've talked about this, I cannot stand the group of friends that I play fantasy football with, because every year when we think we've come up with the proper punishment, something that'll shame people into actually going and being active during the season, we get somebody that all of a sudden balks at the thought of paying up when we get to the end of the year.
You might need new friends.
Yeah.
These friends of yours sound very suspect. Although I will say, for a long time, I hosted a local radio show down in Miami. We had a humiliation pool, and it wasn't fantasy, but it was picking games straight up. And there are so many humiliations that we never paid off. So I've done it too.
No.
I think we've all done it at times, but not for fantasy, man. Fantasy, you've got one thing to focus on a year. One thing, one league, you gotta pay your debt to your league.
It's gotta be a little bit of honor amongst fantasy thieves here. So we're gonna try and restore some honor here and get you some help, because as we head closer and closer to the fall, a lot of folks keeping stock of what happens in training camp, trying to get ready for their drafts. And so to help us out with that, Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst, one of the co-hosts on the Daily Wager, you've also heard his voice around here at ESPN Radio, is joining us now. Tyler, how you doing, man?
What's up, Amber? Golick Jr. Happy to be a part of the Fantasy Football Marathon, my first year here at ESPN. And I'll admit, I too have reneged on some fantasy bets when finishing in last place. But that's neither here nor there.
Oh, well, I mean, what was the bet now? We've got to hear what drove you from the edge.
I don't have any tattoos. That's all I'll say.
Wow.
I'm still clean in terms of no ink on my skin.
Honestly, for me at this point, that would be an easy one. I've always said I got so many to begin with right now. What's another one amongst friends here? So we'll have to work on getting Tyler a tattoo. But in the meantime, Tyler, for folks looking to avoid that here, I feel like a good place to always start, whether it's a normal league, whether it's a dynasty league, is some of the rookies that people are trying to buy low on here. When you look around here, are there a couple of rookies in particular you got your eye on as we head into fantasy drafts?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, everyone knows about the guys that were taken in the first round, the Najee Harrises, the Kyle Pittses, the Jamar Chases, and the opportunity that they're going to have. But some guys that were taken later in the draft that I think could provide some value deeper into the season, a couple of running backs, Javonte Williams of Denver, Trey Sermon, San Francisco. I think Sermon is already the best running back on that roster. And if San Francisco is as good as most people think they will be this year, regardless of who's playing quarterback, you want some type of investment in Kyle Shanahan's running game. And Sermon showed us last year at Ohio State that he could be not just a two-down grinder, but maybe a three-down workhorse if he grows as a pass protector. Same for Javonte Williams. I thought he should have been the first running back taken out of North Carolina. Pittsburgh, of course, chose Najee Harris. But if something happens to Melvin Gordon, if they get competent quarterback play, that Denver team could surprise. And Williams just had a nose for the end zone last year at UNC with 19 touchdowns. So those are a couple of running backs. The wide receivers I like, Rondale Moore. This guy's a freak of nature. Maybe small, but an absolute freak of nature with his speed and strength at his size, working in a Cliff Kingsbury offense that's going to run plays at a rapid pace with Kyler Murray, and defense is more worried about DeAndre Hopkins on the other side. And Elijah Moore was an absolute production monster at Ole Miss. going to New York, will be able to grow alongside Zach Wilson. I don't know how good that team will be, but really only Corey Davis is the only name on the pecking order as far as pass catchers with the Jets that might demand more attention from defenses than Elijah Moore. So those are a few rookies that you can get in the middle or later rounds, I think, that could have big fantasy impacts, especially later in the season, the playoffs as well, when they start to really establish their roles for the real-life teams.
Jalen Hurts' stock is up generally, but is the Eagles quarterback worth drafting in fantasy?
I think absolutely he is, Amber. And whether or not he's a good real-life quarterback, I think the jury is still out on that. But I think it's already abundantly clear that he is a fantastic fantasy quarterback because he has that rushing upside, that rushing equity. I think there was a game last year against Washington where he only threw for 74 yards, but he still mustered up 20 fantasy points because he ran for 70 yards and two rushing touchdowns. When you have that type of rushing floor at the quarterback position, it just puts you head and shoulders above the traditional pocket passers, the Tom Brady's, the Matthew Stafford's, the Matt Ryan's that you see. So I think Jalen Hurts could be a top five fantasy quarterback this year. I would draft him just barely behind the likes of Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. I think he's going to be a really, really good fantasy asset this year.
That dual threat ability, an absolute must for fantasy quarterbacks. It's Chinay Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Amber Wilson talking to Tyler Fulgham from the Daily Wager, helping us get right for this fantasy season. All right, we've heard a lot of the guys that you're bullish on going into this year. Who are you fading as we get closer to the start of 2021?
Yeah, there's a few names that I'm fading relative to where they're being taken, their average draft position. One is Nick Chubb, just because he has no real receiving role. He's great, maybe the best pure runner in the NFL right now, but with Odell Beckham back, you might see Kevin Stefanski slightly throw the ball, just slightly a little bit more. He's still going to be a run-first team, but Kareem Hunt's back there as well to take third-down usage. And Chubb is someone, if he's not hyper-efficient, which of course he can be, you could be disappointed if you take him in the first round. So he's someone I'm kind of fading a little bit. As far as quarterbacks are concerned, those pocket passers, the Matt Ryans of the world after he loses a Julio Jones, that's certainly not a Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think is going to start very much as well. So if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm throwing Trey Lance out there right away, especially in a matchup against Detroit in the first game of the season where they're touchdown favorites. I think that's a nice kind of welcome to the NFL comfortably for Trey Lance. So fading those quarterbacks that don't have rushing upside, Nick Chubb, even though he is a great real life, it's like the opposite of Jalen Hurts. Awesome, awesome real life running back. Not as good as a fantasy running back because he doesn't really get as much three down work and as some goal line touches even get stolen by Kareem Hunt as well.
Let's talk sleepers. I keep seeing Sam Darnold on sleeper lists. Does he make the cut? Who are your favorite sleepers?
I think Darnold is going to be better than most people realize. He's got DJ Moore to throw to. Terrace Marshall Jr., the rookie out of LSU. It seems every wide receiver out of LSU is a beast. I think he's going to contribute alongside Robbie Anderson, and we know what Christian McCaffrey is, certainly. Some other sleepers to think about, Marquez Callaway, New Orleans Saints, Michael Thomas. We know he's not going to be playing anytime soon, and they don't have anyone else really established behind Michael Thomas. So whoever's playing quarterback, whether it's Jameis or Taysom, Marquez Callaway seems to be separating himself a little bit at New Orleans camp. I do think Elijah Moore, who I mentioned with the Jets, obviously a good one as well. A couple of Rams. We talk about Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods a lot, but don't forget DeSean Jackson is reunited with Sean McVay, who made him very productive in Washington with Kirk Cousins. And he's going to provide that deep speed that's been missing from the Rams ever since Brandon Cooks and Sammy Watkins have been gone. And we know Matt Stafford likes to chuck the ball deep with his arm strength. And an even deeper sleeper at tight end is Rams rookie out of UCF, Jacob Harris, who is 6'5", 4'3", speed at the tight end spot. Again, we know Stafford likes to use big-bodied wide receivers in the red zone. Go back to his days with Calvin Johnson. And although Kupp and Woods are really good route runners, they're both like 6'6", 6'1". So if you want jump balls in the end zone, I think Harris could score 4 or 5 TDs alone and just with red zone work this year, working with Matthew Stafford. So Bryan Edwards out of Las Vegas, another wide receiver who may be able to blossom now that Nelson Agholor has moved on. By all accounts, he's been compared to Randy Moss and T.O. in camp, and we know camp accounts can be blown out of proportion. He's certainly probably not going to be a Hall of Famer in that regard, but the dude's got some physical skills, and injuries have kind of been what held him down his first couple of years in the league. So Bryan Edwards and Marquez Callaway, a couple of my favorite sleepers at the wide receiver spot.
Bryan Edwards was getting a lot of high praise when he was at South Carolina, so that would not be surprising if he can string this together and stay healthy. Maybe the Randy Moss TO comp wasn't fully there yet, but we got time to grow into this one. Tyler, we appreciate the time and the insight. Everyone check out Tyler Foljam as a part of the Daily Wager and as a part of the Fantasy Marathon around here at the network today. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you, Amber. Thank you, Gold.
Awesome stuff there. All right, coming up next, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll take more of your great fantasy punishment ideas, the worst you've ever seen or heard, because we need ideas around here for how me and Shanae are going to try and shame each other over the course of this upcoming fall. But coming up next, we'll give you a couple more rookies to keep an eye on and check in on a billionaire who felt like firing up the Twitter fingers here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, offering coverage options as unique as your business. Progressive covers companies of many sizes and specialties. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Janae Agwumike today. And Amber, listen, we're both pretty active on Twitter here. You were helping me earlier on Twitter today because I confess to everyone, I was sitting around super stressed out. I don't host a lot of guests at my house. I've been in this house for about 5 years now. And I got a couple coming this weekend that's going to stay with me in my guest bedroom. I looked up in my guest bedroom and realized in 5 years, I have only managed to put a bed, one small nightstand table in there, and a picture of a black pug surrounded by colorful donuts. And that's it inside the room. So I've become very worried about what the situation's going to look like here. And you've said that we might have to reconsider our friendship now. Oh, you know what? Right on cue. Amber Wilson just mentioned she's doing this from her home in Florida, said it was storming badly outside here, and I feel like the internet has taken hold of Amber in this situation here. So we're going to work to get Amber Wilson back online again, hopefully storming down where she is safe and doing all right here. I will confess, though, I have no idea what to do in decorating my house. I mentioned that already. It's my biggest insecurity. I generally walk through life like I'm my father's son. I'm not embarrassed by much here. And so looking around my house, I don't know what to put on the walls. Like, the furniture is one thing. That's a major stressor in trying to figure out how I'm going to do this. But trying to figure out what to hang on the walls feels like a marriage proposal. Because once it gets up there, it's not coming down for a while.
Oh, all you got to do is just find, like, the dopest artwork, some sports pictures, some pictures of you and your family, because you know you don't got a girl.
No, it wasn't like that. I want you to cut your own sound of yourself so we can play it back and find out if it was like that.
It wasn't like that. I promise. Just find some artwork, find some pieces at the little thrift store down the street. Go on Etsy.com. They got some dope stuff on there. You be set.
He plugging stuff now?
Go on Etsy. You want me to buy from your store on there, Cliff? Is that where this is going?
Hey, man, I'm going to throw up a couple pieces up there later. Help a brother out, please.
Wow. All right, you know what? Cliff, cut your own response to me right there. That's a tremendously bad John. That was shade on top of shade. You know my mom listens to this show too, man, so guard yourself right now because she's coming for your chin here.
Shout out to Chris.
Man, she's going to hurt you here. I genuinely struggle so much because you're right. I'm a single 31-year-old dude. I don't know how to decorate this house. So I've been trying to figure that out. So that is stressful enough. I will say, though, at least my billionaire boss didn't get up this morning and subtweet me. Because that's a different kind of stress here. Because that's what we got from Mets owner Stephen Cohen. Now, he took over the organization this offseason. Stephen Cohen, billionaire owner, went ahead and did the thing and spent money. Like, did what every fan wants to see, spent money, went out, acquired a lot of marquee players here, and is now frustrated with the return that he's getting. We mentioned this yesterday. According to FanGraphs, the Mets went from a 78% chance to make the postseason prior to the All-Star break, and now after that, they're sitting at around 16% here. And Stephen Cohen, the Mets owner, tweeted, "It's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. The best teams have more disciplined approach. The slugging and OPS numbers don't lie." Now, I think we've got Amber Wilson back here with us. And Amber, I want to know who in the organization gave him the slugging and OPS numbers for him to use as ammo in this tweet here. But where are we at on owners turning into internet commenters?
Well, internet commenters, I think Cliff just turned into an internet commenter. Mm. I did come back just in time to hear him take that flamethrower to you. But in terms of Steve Cohen, you know, it's unusual because we're not used to owners acting like fans, right? And this is Steve Cohen acting like a fanboy. That's what this is. He's a first-year owner, and he seems like a legit true fan. This is his team, and he's letting his emotions get the best of him. I don't mind that in my ownership. I actually like it, but I'm not a Mets owner. I've heard Greeny talk about this. He said that he doesn't care for it in terms of his owner. And I understand a lot of people want the owner to be more buttoned up, or a lot of people always insult the owner if they're out there in the media too much. Hey, we've seen that with the Dallas Cowboys. Or if they like the camera a little too much, they're a little too vocal. Some people have a problem with those types of owners. I like the emotion. I like the emotion in sports. I don't necessarily need the owner to pretend all the time like they're objective or they don't care. I mean, get out. It's 2021. Get out there. Fanboy on Twitter. Let your team know they've lost 14 of their past 19. Let your team know that they need to do better. Come on, guys. Like, what are we doing here? What am I paying you for? Let's go. But I can understand how maybe this isn't as well received by the team and, you know, the manager.
Well, but this is a good reminder, Amber, that we know directly what audience he's trying to reach, right? Like, I've always said with coaches, when you hear them say something about a player, about their team to the media, it's generally because they've said it so much behind closed doors and it hasn't taken hold that they want to try and approach the message in a different way. So I usually give the benefit of the doubt there that you've tried to handle this behind closed doors. Steve Cohen doesn't give a sugar frost a damn what these guys have to say about anything. He doesn't have to see them inside the clubhouse every day. He just signs the checks, and he believes his money should be performing better here. He is trying to reach those fans, who I'm sure are lapping this up. The irony is, and what's kind of emblematic about the entire Mets experience, is Steve Cohen, instead of being accountable for the purchases that he has made here as far as players and the players he's brought in, because if he wants to get mad at someone, the buck stops with him. He brought these guys over here and made that evaluation, or is at least signing the check for the evaluation here. No. Instead of that accountability, he's looking to point some fingers and find some people to blame, which is exactly what fans want.
Well, this is a roster that includes a whole bunch of multi-time all-stars, right? So it's in terms of talent, they should have it, and yet that has been a completely unproductive offense, and I think that's where his frustration lies. And his manager did say, hey, I'm not a Twitter guy. I'm aware of the tweet from Steve. I feel like that's really who this is directed at, but you're doing it very publicly instead of behind the curtain like we're used to seeing owners handle things. I do like the passion, though. Was my point. I do like the passion. I like an owner who, you know, legitimately cares. This isn't just a business venture. This is a real fanfare for him.
I do enjoy that Steve Cohen is also just getting to understand the true Mets experience. Like, disaster is always lurking around the corner. We've been waiting for the other shoe to drop, and here it is. I've been waiting for them to run back the audio that Amber referenced earlier of Cliff shading me as I laid myself bare. I tried to have a vulnerable moment about something I was insecure about with you guys, and this was how Cliff chose to deal with his assessment of why I can't decorate my house, how I should go about these things. Trying to figure out what to hang on the walls feels like a marriage proposal, because once it gets up there, it's not coming down for a while.
Oh, all you got to do is just find, like, the dopest artwork, some sports pictures, some pictures of you and your family, because you know you don't got a girl.
He leaned into that one
that
a little bit here.
Rough.
That was foul on a number of levels here. At Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter, at AmberW790 here. Was that blatant shade by Cliff? Because
and then
all
Cliff said,
the
I don't mean
yes.
it like that. I didn't mean it like that. What did you mean it like?
Yeah.
Because, like, it's a running joke that Mike doesn't have a girl and his mom always wants him to have a girl at some point in his life. And then.
Coming up next. We are going to talk to one of our more dignified guests here, a voice who I can trust will give us competent answers and not out-and-out shade. We'll do that after this word from Rumble On. Now, does the thought of selling your motorcycle, ATV, or vehicle already make you exhausted? There's no need to keep putting it off because RumbleOn.com makes selling easy. You'll have a cash offer in minutes and a free pickup. Harley, Polaris, Can-Am, and Yamaha. Trade in or sell, RumbleOn will pay cash no matter what the make or model. Visit RumbleOn.com today and enter promo code RADIO to get a $300 increase on your cash offer. Fast bikes, faster cash. Back after this, Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. And we just mentioned, we got an owner in Major League Baseball going the Twitter fingers route. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Mark Cuban and other owners have made this popular here. But Stephen Cohen being very critical of his Mets, who have enjoyed a very solid slide after the All-Star break here. So for more on what's going on in the Mets experience, we're heading to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our friend and ESPN Major League Baseball writer June Lee, who's with us now here. And June, is it safe to say that Steve Cohen is now getting the true Mets experience post All-Star break?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate in that you see the raised expectations. We see, number one, the subdued expectations at the beginning of the season. They slowly get raised, and then they disappoint you. Like, I feel like that's a consistent narrative arc that you see across almost every Mets season in recent history. The fact that he is tweeting out this angrily, I feel like, is both reflective of the fact that, like, this is what Mets fans are usually like on social media when this is happening. But the guy tweeting right now just happens to be the guy who owns the team.
Now, June, as far as the actual on-field reasons for this, there's plenty of things to be frustrated by, losing 14 of their last 19, and we know pre- and post-All-Star how stark the playoff odds look for them. They didn't go out there and trade for Chris Bryant. Was this one of those moves that's going to end up haunting them based on how their other bats have failed to perform?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that definitively before the end of the season because, you know, baseball is weird and things. All weird things can always happen, but I think it's one of those moves where Chris Bryant was so heavily connected to the Mets throughout the course of that trade deadline. And to see him end up in San Diego, I think, in San Francisco, is partially a result of the fact that the Dodgers went out and were so aggressive. And the NL West felt like they really, both the Padres and the Giants both felt like they needed to aggressively add in order to be a playoff contender. But it also speaks, I think, to the fact that this NL East has kind of been a disappointment the entire season. I mean, I was included in this group of talking about how the NL East was probably going to be the best division in baseball, and it's basically turned out to be the division with the most mediocre teams in it. You know, there's obviously been injuries in Atlanta, but I think that the deadline, and I think a similar thing is happening in Boston right now as well, where people are questioning, like, should we have done something? Like, it's one of those times where you really can't take winning for granted in baseball because, and I think the Cubs showed this, when you have a group of players and you have an opportunity to win, it's best to do it now because who knows what's going to happen down the road.
ESPN Major League Baseball writer June Lee joining us. And June, you just mentioned the Bo Sox. They're not doing much at the trade deadline. How did the Yankees turn the tables so remarkably on the Red Sox? Is it just come down to those moves at the trade deadline and the Red Sox kind of being complacent?
Yeah, I mean, it factors in with Joey Gallo and Rizzo, who's obviously been the COVID injury list, but also getting Luke Voit back, who is an MVP candidate last year during the COVID short season, coming back and hitting well as of late. And then you also have to look at guys like Luis Gil, who's come up from the minor leagues in 3 starts and 15 in the third innings. He hasn't let up a run so far. It's a lot of little pieces starting to come together where, you know, I think this Yankees team really has missed Corey Kluber, who threw a no-hitter and then almost immediately went on the disabled list. He was supposed to be a major factor in turning this rotation around. Then you've seen better starts than Jameson Taillon as well. Throughout the course of the last couple of weeks. But it's a lot of small things, I think, adding up on top of the additions that the Yankees have seen at the deadline. And, you know, Chaim Bloom's justification for the Red Sox not improving that team at the deadline was that they're trying to balance the present and the future. And I think there was a lot of Red Sox fans who were angry about the fact that they didn't do more than just get Kyle Schwarber or add anything to the bullpen or add anything to the rotation. In the subsequent weeks, we've seen this rotation fall apart a little bit. Martin Perez has pushed to the bullpen. And so, you know, it's going to be one of those questions where, especially in the next couple of years, in seeing how the Red Sox perform and whether or not they're perennial contenders for the division in the World Series, about, you know, the Red Sox looked like one of the best teams in baseball for a large portion of the season. And if they struggle in subsequent seasons, there's going to be a harsher limelight on Chaim Bloom and whether or not he should have done something this year.
Yeah, it's certainly sticking his neck out there with some of those lack of moves there. talking to June Lee here with us on the Goodyear Hotline. And June, we've spent so much of this year in awe of Shohei Ohtani and what he's managed to do as a pitcher, as a position player. It's been a great celebration, but unfortunately, we also had to deal with an instance in the broadcast booth surrounding Shohei Ohtani. Tigers television analyst Jack Morris has been suspended indefinitely by Bally Sports Detroit after he used an accent describing what the Tigers should do when pitching to Shohei Ohtani here. It was an ugly moment, June. It was an embarrassing apology here. What were your thoughts as you saw this event play out in front of us?
Yeah, I talked about this on the Around the Horn, and I'll pretty much say the same thing here, in that it's emblematic of how much of not just the sports media, but I think American media as a whole has been unprepared to talk about Asian Americans in the limelight and prominent Asian Americans as a whole, and having the language and the discourse enabled to do this in a way that's interesting and nuanced, and not having to lean on, you know, incredibly outdated racist stereotypes and accents in order to, you know, provide some sort of quote-unquote entertainment. But the thing that struck me about Morris's apology was that it wasn't about the intent of what he did, because there's no justification for the intent. The intent was to caricaturize, you know, an Asian who's in the limelight right now and has been one of the biggest stories in all across sports. But it was about apologizing if anyone was offended. And that's the type of apology in this situation that is just not adequate. And I think it speaks to just, you know, obviously Morris has been suspended for the rest of the season, but I think it speaks to a larger problem in the media, and includes us at ESPN, and includes, you know, the entire sports media, but of trying to get more informed about not just, you know, talking about Asian Americans, but Black Americans and other minorities as well, because this is not just an isolated instance. It speaks to a much greater problem in the media as a whole.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is sadly not something that is surprising in the landscape that we've seen as of late, even though at this point you'd hope it should be here. June, we always appreciate you giving us some time, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'm sure we'll talk to you real soon, all right?
Thanks for having me on, Golic and Amber. I appreciate it.
Awesome stuff. Again, check him out, June Lee, our ESPN MLB writer. Does such a great job covering the sport around here. Coming up next, though, a familiar play in the world of college football here. We'll tell you which team is under the NCAA crosshairs next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
The beginning of the season, oh man, I want to be in that moment. It's just one of them things where you say, man, I wish I had that right now.
Are you ready? Because I'm ready.
This is Marty Smith, and I'm ready.
This is Keyshawn Johnson. The Dallas Cowboys are ready.
This is Matthew Berry. The Syracuse Orange are ready.
This is Alan Hahn. I'm ready.
Football is back, and it kicks off every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, and continues all day right here on ESPN Radio. Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
So, Amber, I referenced it before I was so rudely slandered by Cliff, our producer here. But I am genuinely asking here, Jhené and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson, I don't know how I'm supposed to decorate a home as a 31-year-old single guy here. Like, I looked around today and I had this realization as I looked at a lot of bare walls in my home that the, like, paralysis of fear and anxiety around hanging stuff up in my house has gripped me for far too long here, and I don't know how to pull out of this.
So one thing that I think we should probably dive into a bit is why you keep using the single pass, because I feel like that's what you're doing there. Now, Cliff, like, went ahead and he handed you that card to play, and you have been playing it since Cliff handed it to you. But I don't know if you're over the age of 30 in particular, if the single card is the reason that you can't decorate your guest. Like, it's the lack of a female presence in your life. That's the excuse for not having stuff on the walls of your guest room, as opposed to you're just a grown man who should just put some stuff on his walls, man, because, you know, you're grown enough and you have a good enough job where you have a guest room to begin with. So I feel like the guest room should be decorated instead of waiting for somebody else to do the job for you. We need to dive into this a little bit more, though, where this paralyzing fear comes from. I mean, don't you have any, like, Notre Dame artwork? You could do some sort of sports theme in there. I feel like you've got stuff that you could decorate this guest room? Because you said it's your buddies coming in to town. So wouldn't they appreciate it?
Well, see, I'm not worried about them specifically. It's just more like this hypothetical visitor that comes in and maybe isn't as close with me, who's all of a sudden going to judge if it's just like a bunch of old memorabilia of myself up there, old pictures from when I was at Notre Dame type things in here. And Amber, I don't play the single card to pass the buck too much here, but at the same time, like, I bought this house when I was, you know, it was probably 3-4 years ago now, and so it's been a lot of process in there. I haven't had a ton of visitors here now, and I just don't have that taste. I guess the reason I look for the presence of someone else is because I just was not endowed with that, like, HGTV God-given home decorating ability here, and so I'm looking for some help on that.
Now, it was hard to take into consideration anything Cliff advised you on after he hit you with the flamethrower of calling you single and lonely.
Let me play that again for people just so they understand the kind of slander I've endured around here. Trying to figure out what to hang on the walls feels like a marriage proposal, because once it gets up there, it's not coming down for a while.
Oh, all you got to do is just find, like, the dopest artwork, some sports pictures, some pictures of you and your family, because you know you don't got a girl.
It gets better every time I hear it, honestly. But he did go on in there, included in that clip, if you ignore him calling you lonely, was him saying that you just got to get some dope artwork, and you could even include some sports memorabilia. Now, I'm not talking about, like, your personal memorabilia, because that might feel a little too much if we're just staying in Mike Golic Jr.'s guest room and it's all photos and awards given to Mike Golic Jr. Like, that's,
there's not that many of those.
That's
either
a little egomaniac. It's not that many. But you could put up some other sports memorabilia. You could put up some nice artwork. I know Cliff had mentioned Etsy. That is a good source for you to get stuff from people that is made by local artisans and people that are very good at decorating and these sorts of things. So there's all sorts of resources. Go on Pinterest, fire up some things. I have like 1,000 paintings in my garage if you want anything, because I have so much artwork. I'll mail you up some stuff.
All right. You know what? There we go. I might have to actually take you up on that here. So I'm gonna try and get my life right. This has been the appropriate level of shaming that I need to try and get my act together here and be an adult on Shanae and Golic Jr., brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. So while I work through my issues there, Amber, did you catch this here? Nebraska apparently working through some issues right now. Reportedly, the NCAA investigating the Huskers on possible violations by football coach Scott Frost here. Their AD, Trev Alberts, put out a statement, said the Nebraska Athletic Department has been working collaboratively with the NCAA to review a matter concerning the football program. There are some reports here of Nebraska reportedly having practices or improper workouts during COVID-19, during the pandemic last summer, amongst other things here. Amber, we've seen this happen in a couple other spots. Is this something that has you worried about Scott Frost's future at Nebraska at all?
Of course. I think you would be silly not to worry about his future. Also, that whole 12-20 record in his first 3 seasons at Nebraska makes you worried about his future in Nebraska. I think that probably plays into this a bit, right? Like, this is an NCAA investigation. Nebraska is investigating itself. Nebraska's complying. Is this a situation where they have a really good reason to get rid of Scott Frost and maybe not pay out on the rest of that contract in the same way that they otherwise would? Call me a bit cynical here, but that could be the direction this is headed. But otherwise, in terms of just the allegations, I don't think the general public cares very much about these sorts of things, right? Like, in terms of investigations we've heard with college football, are fans really concerned about practice violations with assistants being brought in that shouldn't be at practice and whatnot? I don't know if that really concerns the fan base, but I just think that the overall concern is his future in Nebraska and what this could mean for that.
It is such a good point and a reminder of how quickly we get over outrage around things in college sports, because again, what they're accused of here, improperly using analysts and consultants and then moving camp workouts off campus last year when those activities were banned, not all that dissimilar from accusations we heard levied at another school this offseason. And yet it's amazing, much like all those allegations and probes into college basketball that we thought were going to rock the bedrock of the sport, we hear it once and it's scary. We hear it a second time and we're just making jokes about the head coach at that point. So it is, you're right, a high pain tolerance for these kind of accusations in the world of college sports, because quite frankly, we know there's real bad stuff happening. And so with these kinds of things, albeit practicing the way they did in the middle of a pandemic, probably not the safest thing for the players, but we know there's plenty of that to go around in this sport. So Nebraska got some NCAA investigations going on. We, Archie Angola Jr., we are presented by Progressive Insurance. And coming up next, we also have a new hero here. A training camp character neither of us expected has emerged with the soundbite you got to hear next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.